40, 42, 45, I've started three new businesses. And in the last 4 years, since I was 56, I've actually started my own YouTube channel.
And welcome to episode 120 of the Midlife Reshape podcast. Now, this week I have a turning point interview, and I'm delighted to be joined by Karen James, who is known as on YouTube as the Geordie Grandma. And Karen has a great story that we explore in relation to just the challenges and changes across life, both professionally, career-wise, business, and health-wise. And I think this is the point of the turning point series. For those of you who've listened for a few weeks, if not longer, you'll know that my interest is really with speaking to people and exploring what it is that actually leads to those intersections in the road where you can go one way or another, and the choices that we can make. And for me, I'm interested in the choices that are made, whether it's to focus on health and lose a significant amount of weight, as was the case with Kate Jackson in episode 117. Or it might be a life change in terms of a career change, or something like a breakdown in a relationship, that kind of thing. Because for me, as I always say, when it comes to midlife health and reshaping that, it's not about the diet. Now, clearly, underneath it all, if we want to lose weight or manage weight, it is about that energy in, energy out deficit. But it's about all the other stuff that happens in life, isn't it? It's about the events in life that can tip us into change, disorientation, emotional turmoil. There's also the things that we do in order to cope with the stresses, whether it's binge eating, alcohol, working harder, that kind of thing. And it's the challenges of life. And for me, that's where it's really fascinating, because what I'm really interested in doing is sharing with you stories that inspire you to believe you can, rather than to sort of resign yourself to staying where you are. If you are stuck, feeling trapped, crushed, lost, feeling like, you know, you're getting too old to, or this is the way it is, you know, this is it, then what I want to really encourage you to do is just have that be open to that question, or that potential for hope that it could be different, and to allow yourself the chance, the opportunity to imagine it could be different, to dream that it could be different, and then potentially start to take the action that could bring that difference into reality. Because it's all very well having a dream and an aspiration, but it stays that way unless we actually take the action. Now, my approach, as always, is about not necessarily taking massive action for a short period of time and then burning out, because no doubt many of us, and I've experienced this myself, we're already busy enough, we're already tired enough. It is about how we can make the subtle, small but significant changes, the sprout size changes in our day-to-day rituals and routines that move us towards that dream or that goal. And that's where real change can last. That's where it's really transformative. And really, the turning point interviews are just an opportunity to hear a story from somebody else. Not necessarily something as dramatic perhaps as Kate's weight loss of 9.5 stone in 2.5 years that was in episode 117. Because, you know, that can be the exception, albeit if you're in that position, then it's useful to really have an inspiration like Kate, or have somebody you can relate to and connect with to help sort of move you in the direction of your goal. You can do it. But for many of us, it's about the day-to-day experiences of life, the things that happen and undermine us, that perhaps knock the wind out of our sails. And there are some brilliant people out there, including Karen in this interview, and other people in the Turning Point interviews, where it has just taken a bit of a change. And that change always starts with some sort of event, or in coaching terms, it's classed as the disorientating dilemma. But that stirs some sort of surfacing of emotions, and it can be painful emotions, but what it can also be is a sense of perhaps it could be different, excitement, hope. And what I want to encourage you to do is, if you've ever been in that position or you are in that position now, is to look at where you're at and to perhaps do a bit of a reframe. Acknowledge the emotions are there, let's not deny them, but let's not get stuck in them. Let's work through them, process them, get the support you need. And then let's go with the hope, the glimmer of excitement, and start to explore that passion, that something that's there. And listen to that inner voice that perhaps is telling you there could be something more. There could be something more. So this interview with Karen James, as I said, the Geordie Grandma, you can follow her on YouTube. The links will be in the show notes at the end. It's a great interview because again, Karen shares her life, her challenges with work, and what shifted her into being a YouTube, I don't know, do you call it personality, a YouTube influencer? I guess well, I'm not that up on the lingo for this kind of thing, albeit I'm trying to become one myself. But the point of it is that the changes and going with the changes, looking for opportunities, I think is part of the journey. So it's a great interview, and I hope you do enjoy it. Let us know any thoughts or feedback by sending me a message at dave@restlessmidlifer.com. And before we kick into the interview, just a couple of asks, if I could. If you are listening to the podcast, whether by a link on your YouTube channel, on a Google channel, page, or you're watching on YouTube, or you have received it via your podcast feed of choice, if you're not already subscribed, could you subscribe? Because it really does make a difference in helping spread the word. If you're already subscribed, it'd be great if you could leave a review, whether it's a comment in YouTube, you know, the old thumbs up on YouTube channel, or a 5-star rating would be great, if I could be cheeky enough to ask for that, on your podcast feed of choice. And if you're not sure how to do any of that, then just head over to midlifereshape.com/podcast, and you'll find an option there to find out how to review on your particular platform, and that would be great. And other than that as well, if you know one other person who has perhaps is in a similar situation, their midlife, they're questioning their direction in life, their health isn't where they want it to be, and they're looking for change, then perhaps share that with them, an episode of this podcast, and get them on to becoming a fellow restless midlifer, and perhaps embarking on their own midlife reshape. That would be great. So we'll catch you after the interview. Hey, lovely to have you along, Karen. It's great to have you on the show. We've known each other for a little while, and I came across you initially as Geordie Grandma. So for the benefit of the audience, do you want to just say hi, tell us a little bit about yourself, and then maybe the story that led you to becoming the Geordie Grandma and what that's all about?
Well, thanks for having us on, Dave. Yeah, I do. I have a YouTube channel and blog called The Geordie Grandma, but it's been a kind of a long journey to get to where I am. I used to be a marketing manager for a pub chain, and I was made redundant. And around the same time, my daughter was really playing up at school. And she was suspended and she was getting into trouble all the time. So I decided to take her out of school when she was 14 and teach her at home, which I did for 2 years. Got her through her GCSEs. I mean, she's 32 now. Everything's fine. Actually, she's 33. But yeah, so when I was teaching her, I needed something to kind of bring an income in. And I discovered virtual assistants, which was basically offering admin services to small businesses who couldn't afford a full-time secretary, or maybe they just wanted an extra bit of help. And I did that for a while, and then I kind of moved into social media help for businesses. It was kind of a gradual movement. And then I moved from giving the businesses social media help, like social media management, into running social media courses, teaching businesses how to use Twitter, LinkedIn, Facebook, I think it was at the time, and how to use that to market their businesses online. And I did that for a while. It's becoming a theme here. I get bored easily with things. And I got a little bit jaded with the social media thing, because there was lots of companies popping up who, you know, were doing social media marketing and social media training. And they were kind of just people who had put a few posts up and decided they were now social media managers. So I got a little bit jaded with that. And around that time, I started to watch some YouTube videos, and I came across this guy who was selling stuff on eBay. He was buying them at car boot sales and charity shops, and he was selling them on eBay. And I was like, really, you can do that? You know, you can buy something for like £1 and sell it for 20. And it turned out you could. So I started my own business. I kind of phased out of the social media and I started my own eBay business. And I did that for about 8 years, and it was quite successful until we hit the pandemic. Sales were still good, but unfortunately I couldn't get the stock, because nowhere was open to get the stock. And by the time the pandemic were coming out of it, I'd lost heart in it a little bit. Because during the pandemic, loads and loads of people decided they wanted to sell on eBay. You know, it was the easiest way to make a little bit of money, I suppose, and they were selling their own stuff. So as I'd been watching YouTube all this time, I had came across some women of my age. I'm 60 now. I was probably about 56 at the time. I came across some women of my own age who had YouTube channels. And they weren't really talking about anything, you know, important. They were kind of, you know, trying clothes on and talking about makeup and just talking about what they bought at the shops. And I just thought, that's quite interesting. I wonder if I could do that. And I thought, I hummed and hawed about it for quite a while, because even though I might look confident when I'm on video, I don't feel confident. So I just thought to myself, well, I'll do the video. And we'll see what happens. And if it's rubbish, I don't have to do anything with it. It wasn't live. So I just sat where I am now, and I had a basket of makeup on my desk, and I just showed what makeup I was using at that time. And I put the video out. And it just grew from there, really. But in the last, that was about 4 years ago. And in the last year, I started to wonder, could I actually make a business out of this? I had a blog as well, because I like to write. So I thought I could combine the two. I'm not really making a business out of it just yet. I'm not making a lot of money, although I do get a little bit from YouTube. But yeah, I thought there needs to be more women over 50 who have a voice, because I found that women of my age, you don't really see much. You don't really see that kind of person on TV. Like, all the main roles are not women over 50. And films are not, you know, they're not women over 50. And even all of the YouTube channels were young women, like, you know, 20s, early 30s. And they were talking about being parents of young kids. And, you know, they were talking about clothes you would wear to go out for the night. I mean, I still go out for nights, but they weren't the kind of clothes I would be wearing. And I just thought there needed to be more women of my age who had a voice on YouTube. And I've noticed in the last year, lots of women my age are now starting their own YouTube channels, which is really good to see. So that's kind of how I got to become the Geordie Grandma. And I do, like I say, I do videos, you know, plus size clothes try-ons, makeup videos, bargain shopping hauls. I do some vlogging of where I am on holiday. Sometimes I vlog with my grandchildren. It's basically, I want to show when you're over 50, that doesn't mean it's the end of your life. You can still, you know, feel good, look good, and enjoy your life. And there's, I've got some subscribers who are in their 70s, some who are in their 80s, and they leave such lovely comments. It's quite obvious that there is a market for what I'm doing. So, that's basically where I am now.
It's interesting that, as you were saying that, I was thinking one of the things with sort of the work I do with midlife, and the podcast used to be called The Restless Midlifer, and the idea that midlife is a movable feast for me. It's not about an age necessarily. It's more about a point where you get to go, is this it? Is this my life? Surely there's a bit more to it than that. And being a bit restless and hungry for something else, and not wanting to be that's the old stereotype of, you know, just settle down, just let life, you know, let life tick by, or, you know, as you go later on, waiting for God is the phrase, you know, that kind of thing. It's that resisting and just embracing life. And I think many of us are kind of trapped into, or feel trapped into, careers. We've got family responsibilities, that kind of thing. And you're right, and you know, I'm going to speak as a bloke, but obviously, you know, from your perspective in terms of representation of women, I certainly think there's obviously more representation of men, but I also think there is the stereotypes that are really worth challenging, because you can sometimes feel like you're not, that perhaps you're past it, or what have you got to offer? And actually, you've got loads, and the world's changed so much, even in 10 years, 20 years, hasn't it? Particularly since COVID, with opportunities to look at other things. And you're representing and Speaking to women that in that particular age bracket, you know, about enjoying makeup and that kind of thing. But I think you're also speaking to or speaking to that underlying thing of, well, look, I can do this. We can flex, we can adapt, we can try different things. And it's kind of a really inspirational thing, I think, to do that, just to
Yeah.
show that you can. You're not necessarily trapped where you are.
Yeah. Yeah. It's funny because I we've been watching a program called Below Deck recently.
Right.
It's about staff that work on super yachts. And they were talking about their careers, and they're just in their 20s, 30s. And I was saying to my husband, I was saying, you know, I wish I could go back to being in my 20s and kind of have a career. And then I thought to myself, I've started since I was, what, 40, 42, 45, I've started three new businesses. And in the last 4 years, since I was 56, I've actually started my own YouTube channel. Is that not a career? But my mindset didn't go there. It went, oh, you know, I can't start a career now. But when I thought about it, I'm like, I have started a new career. So yeah, it's strange.
Yeah.
I mean, it does, and I know YouTubers who have started their YouTube channels in their late 70s. You know, there's no reason to think, oh, well, life's over, because it's not.
Yeah. And I think that's part of it, isn't it? It's to resist that kind that the perhaps the stereotypes out there, but also the stories we tell ourselves because we're kind of conditioned to that. I
Yeah.
fall into the trap sometimes. You know, of getting out of a couch and groaning. And I've got absolutely no reason to groan when I get out of the couch. It's just a habit, you know, silly
Yeah.
things like that. But it is about sort of reframing it. And I think that's where it's inspiring to see that those opportunities. And one of the things that, you know, when you're talking to somebody who feels like they're a bit stuck or trapped, is to start to shift the focus on, well, what could you do? And just allow yourself to think and dream. And it sounds like, you know, just from what you're saying, you know, with deciding to homeschool and then the changes that meant, it sounds like would you say that you're a naturally flexible or creative entrepreneurial in that sense, or was that more out of need for you?
I've always you mentioned before about thinking, you know, there's got to be more to life than this. And when I was in me, I mean, we had the kids quite young. I think I was 24 when I had my first child. I've got two. And I remember thinking late 20s and probably most of the way through my 30s, is this it? You know, is this because I was doing a job, I was doing a secretarial job, I was looking after the kids, and it was a bit like Groundhog Day. And I remember thinking several times, is this all there is? There's got to be more to it than that. And I left school with, I think it was one O level, didn't have GCSEs then. And I went back to college when I was 30, I think I was 35, went back to college and did a degree in business management. And it was from there that I started to think there is more to life than just, you know, sitting, watching the telly, looking after the kids. So I forgot what you asked us now.
Yeah, well, I suppose it was whether you were you're naturally entrepreneurial, or what was it that sparked the sort or shifted the change. I know there was the need to homeschool, but was there something else? And it sounds like you've answered that.
I think I've always had a, I wouldn't have called it entrepreneurial spirit back then, but it probably was. I like to try new things. I don't like to be pigeonholed into something. Like I remember when we did careers advice at school, you know, girls were secretaries and boys, I don't know, went into factories or, you know, that's the kind of background I came from. So yeah, I think I've always wanted something more and really, you know, knew I could do something more. It was just finding the right something, which has taken us a little bit of time.
Yeah. Well, I often joke that I still don't know what I want to do when I grow up. And there's a bit of truth in it. You know, I love what I do. You know, I love the work I do and what have you. But it's taken a bit of rattling around working out what I didn't want to do.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
realized when I was a police officer that actually this isn't for me. And that was kind of a how do I step out of that? Because it's very secure, it's very safe, and you know, not safe physically necessarily, but safe as in you've always got a wage coming in unless you do something silly. But
And it's that thing, and it sounds like that entrepreneurial spirit, it's rooted in that need for difference and change, or to find that thing. There's a curiosity in that as well, I think.
I've never been motivated by money, which is just as well because I haven't got any. But I've never been motivated by money. It's doing something that I enjoy and doesn't feel like work, is probably what motivates us.
I think that's a biggie. It's certainly been the motivator for me, is stepping away from what was a reasonably well-paid career, good pension, and the chance to sort of go up the ranks to do something that's pretty scary, pretty uncertain. It has its ups and downs. It was more about what's the adventure? Where is it? Where is or who am I in that? And I think that's a common thing that I get. It's not everybody. A lot of people are quite happy and God bless them, it's great. But I think a lot of people are questioning that, and the things that you were saying, like, is this my life? And often we'll just stay there. And I often think about, well, what's the cost of that? Yes, there's benefits in terms of secure wage or et cetera, or you've got certainty, but what's the cost of it to you as a person?
I think I've always been, again, I've never been money oriented, like money motivated, and I've always felt you make the most of life. My mum died when she was 27 years old, and it kind of every year older I got after 27, it's like, oh, I'm 5 years older than she was, I'm 10 years older than she was, and it's like, you've got to make the most of everything. You've got to grab opportunities when they're there. That's not to say I don't get stressed out about things, because I do. But I just think that has kind of made me into a person who always wants to be doing something rather than earning money.
And it's interesting how life, things that happen, kind of can shape that in you. And actually, thinking back when you talk about you going off to uni, that was one of the things that my mum did. She was, well, I'm guessing now, probably in her 30s, 40s, maybe. I'm trying to work it out based on my age. But she went back and studied law and went into that and got herself a profession. It's this thing about sometimes you think it's too late for me. Is it too late? And sometimes you can kind of question that, can't you, in times, and think, oh, I've missed me golden years are behind me. And actually, that's not true. I mean, I wouldn't thank you for going back to me 20s, albeit I like the energy.
Yes.
I'm not sure I'd like to go back, because it wasn't, it was a time full of stress and angst. And I kind of feel more settled now. And I think that's what that age brings you, a base on which you can perhaps play and check. Chase, look at things that you could do.
When I was doing my degree, my dissertation was actually stress in mature students, and the hypothesis was that mature students would be more stressed doing the course than younger students, and I actually disproved my own hypothesis, because it turned out that actually younger students were more stressed because they had more pressure on them to do well and get a good job, whereas people in their 30s and 40s who are doing degrees didn't have that pressure. Most of them were just doing it just to prove they could do it, which is what I was doing. So actually disproved that.
Well, shows it's an honest piece of research then, doesn't it? Which is sometimes the challenge. But actually, that makes total sense, because if I think back to the pressure I put myself under, when I was at college and that kind of thing, versus I did my master's in the coaching a couple of years back. And yes, it's stressful because you're adapting, you're trying to remember how to write academically, learn new things. But you bring a different perspective on it, but different toolkit, perhaps a lifetime of encountering stressful stuff that you've managed to get over, so I'll be able to do this. I know, that kind of inner sense, not always the case. I think there is a growth there, but yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. So in terms of one of the things that is a biggie for a lot of people I speak to, and I'm guessing some of the listeners as well, is there's that, that idea of, I want life back on my terms a little bit more than it is. I want to have a bit more adventure. I want to just, step out and try things. And it doesn't have to be a total career change or sack your job off. It could be just, a qualification or a course or, something. But I think one of the things is also the feeling of decline in energy. There's times when you just don't feel as if you have the energy. And have I got the energy for this? Have I got that? Has that ever played into, the journey you're on in terms of that?
Most definitely, and more so recently, I've got type 2 diabetes. I was diagnosed with it about 13 years ago. And like a lot of things with to do with medical stuff, I take no notice of what people say to us. When I was first diagnosed, it's like, oh, you have to eat properly, you have to lose weight, you have to do that. And I'm like, well, what's going to happen if I don't do that? Well, you'll die. That was the response I got. You'll die. I mean, telling somebody that is, I don't, for me, that's not going to motivate us to do anything about it. Maybe it should have done, but it didn't. And in the last, I'd say the last couple of years, the diabetes has got a little bit out of control. When you have high blood sugar for a long period of time, it does affect different things. It is a slow progression, which is why you don't think it's serious. You don't think anything's wrong until you've actually hit that stage. And I developed diabetic neuropathy in my feet, which means if I continue to eat the way I eat, and my blood sugar doesn't go down, I'm going to use the loose use of me, I'll lose the use of my legs. I won't be able to walk because they go numb. It's, damage to the nerves. So I did decide a couple of years ago that I needed to do something about it. I've got two grandkids now, 5 and 7, and I'd like to be around for them when they're older. When they come to stay, sometimes I have no energy to play with them. So I need to eat healthily to be able to do that. So I started eating low carb. I did try keto. I did it for 6 weeks and it really does work. I never felt hungry. But for me, keto isn't something I could do for the rest of my life. You have to cut out so much. So low carb is the next best thing. And I've been doing that for a couple of years. I have lost a couple of stone. I'm kind of hovering at the moment, within half a stone of where. I'm kind of around the 14 and a half to 15 stone mark, and I still need to lose a lot more weight. But I think I've been overweight all my life, and I've yo-yo dieted all my life. I'm a comfort eater. I was listening to one of your podcasts actually, and I eat. You were talking about, how do you think about food? I eat when I'm upset, I eat when I'm angry, I eat when I'm bored. I just eat. Not so much when I'm happy, I don't eat. It's all the negative emotions that makes us eat. I've yo-yo dieted most of my life, so it is hard to stick to it. And the more you diet, then you stop and you put the weight back on and a little bit more. So this has to be something that I need to get my head around for the rest of my life because it's now, it hasn't become a thing. I want to lose weight so I look better. Now it's, I need to keep my weight under control because I want to actually live, past 65, 70. But it's not easy.
No. And it's interesting, there's a few things there to pick up on. I think that so it's interesting that sometimes the turning points for us aren't the what you think would be the obvious, or you're going to die if you don't. Some and I find this a lot actually, but it's certainly something for me because my turning point was I'm 53 now, I was 45 when my little second, well, third child, second daughter Rosie was born. Apart from thinking, what was I thinking?
Hard work.
it really hit me hard because obviously energy levels are a lot lower. But the key thing, the realization for me was, I knew I was drinking too much. I knew I wasn't eating right. My cholesterol, I knew it wasn't great, and it wasn't long after that I went and had it checked, and it wasn't great. It was kind of dangerously high. But what woke me up was to think, you know what? when she turns 21, I'm going to be 66 if I'm here. And it
Yeah.
wasn't so much the bit for me, it was more about her. And when you mentioned the grandkids, I think that it's sometimes we have to kind of look outside of ourselves for that, you know, what really matters. Yes, we're doing it for ourselves, but we're
Yeah.
actually pinning it on something that really, really matters to us.
I think I thought my own kids were already, you know, mostly grown up when I was diagnosed with it, and it can't, well, they can look after themselves. I mean, I probably didn't consciously think, oh, they can look after themselves if I died, but I suppose it's like telling a child, you know, if they're kind of jumping on the bed and they shouldn't be, you know, stop doing that. Are you going to fall off and hurt your head? And the kids are like, no, I'm not. And then they fall off and hurt their heads. It's like a bit like that with me with the diabetes. You know, you'll die. It'll be fine. But you get to a stage where you realize, well, maybe it won't be fine. So, and I think because the grandkids came along and they're still so young and we'll have a really good relationship with them. I say, well, what if anything happened to us? And, you know, I know they'd be fine, but I'd rather they didn't have to go through that quite so young.
Absolutely. And I think, as you say, sometimes those are the points where it can turn enough, but there's still stuff to do. There's still work to do in terms of finding the right thing. And I think, I mean, you mentioned obviously with the things like the keto and the low carb, they're kind of often, I don't know, you know, I'm not a nutritionist, but they're often recommended now for, I think, you know, diabetes and what have you. But I know it is recognized that, I mean, keto is an extreme kind of version. Some would argue it's not, but I think they're the people who find it really, really easy. Most of us, it's an extreme exclusionary thing. And even when you look at it in terms of research, some of the more like the better advocates of it, the ones who are thinking from a science base, will recognize it's only really something you do for a couple of years or for an intervention because there's downsides, you know, in terms of it potentially on your kidneys and stuff like that. So it's kind of a medical intervention. So I totally get what you're saying. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's about finding what works for you. This is what I always bang on about. It's kind of finding what works and is right for you and not what you should do. You know, I should do this, I should do that. That's easy to say, but often.
I've always found dieting just really, really stressful, and more so, I'd say, in the last 5 years, because it's like somebody will say, oh, do Weight Watchers, and somebody saying, do Slimming World, and then, oh, you should do keto, or you should do low carb, or you should do. And it's like, it gets too much. Your head's just full of it. And it's like, well, what am I supposed to do? And then you just go back to the way you ate, stuffing your face with crisps and donuts. And it's like, well, I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing. But I know low carb does work, and it is advocated for people with diabetes, like type 2 diabetes, to keep their blood sugars level. And I know it works for me. But then, you know, something else will pop up and you think, well, should I be doing that instead? So there's just too much stuff out there.
That's a common thing, and it's that overwhelm, isn't it? And the fear of like I have to do it perfectly, and that's one of the things I approach with my clients is really let's kind of strip it away. Let's just strip away and stop, park the stress, because actually the basics are more principles and how you do it. There's 100 ways, you know. So energy in, energy out. That's the basic for weight loss. And people argue different factors, but you know that's how you lose weight. But how you do it is there is a lot of options. And the way I always think is go what's as close, try and go as what's as close to where you are and what you're doing now as you can, so that you're changing as little as possible as you can. Now, sometimes if it's like you say with diabetes or a medical thing, it might need a bit more of a dramatic intervention. But many of the time we try to go all or nothing into it, don't we? And I've done it, you know,
Yeah,
being
I did that
most.
with the keto. I mean, you just cut out carbs basically altogether. And you wouldn't believe how many things have got carbs in them. Everything has carbs in it. And it's just, I stuck to it for 6 weeks, and I did feel better. I lost weight, my blood sugar came down, but it's just not something I could stick to for the rest of my life. It's too restrictive. Like, if you want to go out for a meal or something, you know, you're kind of sitting there with your bit of lettuce and a glass of water. That's no good, is it?
And there's also exactly that in that it almost for I'll park the people who enjoy it. because there are a few who do, but like for most of us, it is serious restriction. It is
Yeah.
impacting on your life. And it's like, well, you don't deserve to enjoy your life. You don't deserve it. But when you think about it, it's like, it's a bit ridiculous, isn't it? That
Yeah.
kind of thing. But we can fall in that because it's punishment as well, isn't it? I think for many of us, you know? And you talk about comfort eating. I think this is the thing, because we eat for lots of reasons, don't we? You know, we eat for social, we eat for the textures, the taste, the fulfillment, we eat for emotions, all of that. And working out those things is important as well.
Yeah. To be honest, I don't even think I like food. I think
Yeah.
if I could take a pill and not eat at all, I would probably be happier because I find myself, I'm probably a bit of a binge eater. I find myself sitting eating and eating and eating, and I'm thinking, why am I eating this? I'm not even tasting what I'm eating. And I kind of know I'm doing it. It's just difficult to stop doing it.
Yeah, and then I suppose you have the guilt and the recrimination on that as well, you know, as to why. But you're right, it's a very complicated thing. Or well, it is. There's a lot that's wrapped up in it. And I think one of the things that I try to sort of do is sort of get people, and I do it myself because I am a work in progress on this, is to sort of park the critical and the self-recrimination for starters, and just explore with curiosity as to what, you know, what the reasons might be, you know.
Yeah, I know as soon as I sit in front of the TV, I'll want to pick. So the answer is don't sit in front of the TV, go and do something else.
It's well, because it's linked in with habits as well, isn't it? The triggers, habits is a trigger action reward, and the trigger is often sitting down on the TV or out with a meal with friends, that kind of thing. And yeah, it's interesting because there's a lot you can do around it. But I guess the key thing is, it's like what motivates you to start the turn, and then how you approach it. And this is a biggie, I think, for many of us, is I think we've been conditioned to believe the moral aspect of it. You know, the moralizing of food, oh, it's because I'm greedy, I'm lazy, I'm wrong to, I should be. And I think that's where it becomes really, well, counterproductive, because it often leads to you doing more of the thing you don't want to do, doesn't it? It's kind of taken off the idea of restriction and of feeling like you're restricted. There has to be some form of restriction to an extent, but it doesn't have to be a lot necessarily, depending on your time scale. And it doesn't have to be punishment.
Yeah, I think that's why keto diets and things like that are a bad thing, long term, because as soon as you do come off it, you just want everything that you didn't have while you were on it, which just makes it worse. You're back to square one.
And it's I just have an image. I have this image. You know those pub games where you're on a bungee and you have to run at a wall and try and grab it, or you know, pull something off the wall. It's a bit like that, because at some point the bungee gets you, and when you're in that kind of restriction, so yeah, it's interesting. It's how to, I guess, part of it is long term. We're kind of talking about this and kind of going down the avenue of that, but I think of you know, diets and what have you. For me, it's I try to focus on not about the diet, and what can you change sustainably in small ways over time. But that also includes looking at what your self-talk is like, the self-sabotage, that kind of thing, which takes a bit of work. But actually, it's probably where the sustainable side is, you know.
I've always thought it wasn't about what you are. Well, it is what about you, but it is about what you're putting in your mouth. But I think most people know what they should eat and what they shouldn't eat. It's definitely it's to do with what's in your mind, isn't it? What's in your head.
Well, kind of my semi-official strap line is it's not about the diet. And I think you're
I think
right.
that's really true.
Yeah, because we kind of know what to do, it's just doing it. And often what we do is we buy into somebody else's idea of shoulds, or, you know, I'm terrible, I'm wrong, I'm this and that, instead of kind of going, look, the world is pretty much set up. There's a phrase that I heard from somebody, Lane Norton, who is he's a nutritional scientist, and he's really good. But he talks about that we live in a world, an obesogenic world, and what he means like about that is it's not to sort of make us out to be victims here, because you know, we have to take some sort of ownership to, you know, in terms of solving the problem. But the world is kind of set up with a very calorie dense, you know, food is always available. It's really sweet, fatty, tasty, lovely. Every event is about food, all of that kind of stuff. So we're in a world where it's always signaling to us. So it's no wonder we struggle with that, and more so these days, you know? And so why are we beating ourselves up for that? Because we're pretty much evolved, haven't we, as cave people to eat when food's available and we're okay when it's not, you know? It's always available.
And it kind of all, when I was young, maybe it wasn't so much available. And you were given things like, you know, chocolate and sweets as treats. And I think parents try not to do that so much these days.
Yeah, I remember that because I used to get a crunchy on a Friday from the shopping with my mum. But it was Friday. That was it, you know? Then I got my pocket money, and the first thing I did with my £5 pocket money was go and buy a bunch of sweets. And I think that was probably the start of some of the binge type stuff for me, you know, because it was associated with, ooh, this is secret and exciting, you know. It's interesting, isn't it? But as it's more ubiquitous now, it's just everywhere. It's so easy. Yeah, so I mean, we've kind of gone down a bit of a rabbit hole there with that. We're talking about your diabetes. It's obviously it's a passion of mine, this whole area, but I think the whole idea is that we have these turning points in life, and you've kind of moved down another new avenue, and for me, that's really inspiring for other people to hear and see, particularly if they're in a place of questioning, and also if they're in a place where perhaps they're relying on a career and an income. It doesn't have to be sack it off and take it, you know. They might try something else out. So in terms of, I'm curious about the YouTube thing as well now, because obviously there are not lots of other options, but you're seeing other people on YouTube doing this. What do you, is there anything that you think about in terms of the future of YouTube, in terms of opening up options and opportunities for people, particularly of our kind of age group who might be, you know, we're used to watching normal telly.
I think there's so many apps around now rather than watching, like, I never, do people call it council telly or something when you watch ITV, BBC? It's very rare I watch anything on those channels, and it's all like, you know, you've got an app, Netflix now, Disney, and YouTube has just become one of those. And I probably watch YouTube just as much as I watch anything on the TV. And I think that is going to be the way forward for at least the next few years. I think more and more people are gonna take to YouTube, and I especially think channels like mine, and you know, other women like who have got channels like mine, lifestyle channels you would call them, we build up subscribers who really feel that they know us. And I've had comments from subscribers who have said, you know, I just think of you as a friend now. And I think YouTube gives people that. It's like a TV program, but they can connect with you in the comments. And if you do live videos, they can connect with you live. And I think that's what makes it better than ordinary TV. And I think that's why it's just going to get bigger. And I think it's going to open up. I think more people over 50, over 60, over 70 will start their own YouTube channels, and they need to.
Great. So if there's any advice, because I'm kind of thinking of that, well, it could be somebody who's retired and looking for something, or it could be somebody who's thinking, you know, this is just something that either could be an exit strategy from work, or just something I'll do when I retire. Any sort of thoughts on where or how somebody might start? You know, so they're not getting overwhelmed necessarily, because I know it can be, can't it? And feeling like you've got to have like 100,000 subscribers in a week and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, just pick up. I mean, you don't need any special equipment. I use my mobile. I use my iPhone. I've got a ring light. That's all the equipment that I've got. You can even edit it on your iPhone, so it doesn't have to be complicated. Just if you've got a hobby, pick up your phone and talk, you know, talk to people, record a video, talk about your hobby, and just put it out there, see what happens. It doesn't have to be, you know, oh, I'm going to build a business on YouTube. It could just start as a hobby, And if you get some kind of traction with it, then why not try and turn it into something that can make money? Because I've only just started earning money on YouTube, but I'm looking at it as growing it so I have some extra income when I get to retirement age. Yeah, I definitely think it's worth doing. I think if you're feeling self-conscious about it, I can't possibly talk to camera. Just think how I thought. You don't have to put it out there if you don't like what you produce. If it's rubbish, don't put it up. But 9 times out of 10, it'll probably be fine. Just do it. You don't need all fancy stuff, and don't worry that you've got no makeup on. I know you've got makeup on today, Dave. Don't worry that you've got no makeup on or your house is a mess. Just do it and see what happens.
Yeah, I love that. And God, I think you can also then you look at how you improve over time rather than trying to be perfect at the beginning. I mean, I look at some of my earlier YouTube videos and think, oh my God, what was I thinking? I still probably even a year ago, it's constant development, but it's that building of your confidence and presence in it. And you mentioned something before, which I think is worth bringing back, is this idea that if somebody's out there thinking, I'm particularly interested in this, and I never see anybody of my age actually being a bit of a figurehead for this or a face. Because you're right, because telly is very much about certain age, beautiful people, blah blah blah, that kind of thing. And actually, we want to meet normal people, normal beautiful people. Do you know normal people who we can connect with and actually see that they're not as glossy and perfect, and actually see the human being behind them. And I think that's it, isn't it, to relate to them. Yeah, I love that. Yeah, it's interesting. So what, in terms of you going forward, you wanting to build the business, build it as so that it grows. What ideas have you got? Just no spoilers. I don't want you to share anything, any trade secrets, but what are you thinking in terms of doing for your business?
Well, I listen to a guy who talks about YouTube, and he always says, don't think about YouTube. Don't think about making money from YouTube. Think about using YouTube to make money,
Right.
which is quite the way you should think about it. Because the money you get from YouTube, for having the ads on, is very, very small. I think I've earned like $200 from them in the last 4 months. So, it's very, very small. So the idea is to do some affiliate marketing. So find, maybe 3 or 4 companies whose products I really like, and I can help sell and get a bit of commission through doing affiliate marketing. I'd like to grow the blog. I think I'm getting about 4,000 views a month on there at the moment. I would like it around 50,000 views a month. So I've got a little bit of way to go. Because once you get to that stage, there's companies that you can put ads on your site and
Right.
it'll boost the income. Again, it's not all about the money. It's something I'm enjoying doing. Maybe I'd like to have some products that are my own. I'm thinking printables. I don't know if you're sure what printables are, but they're something people can buy online and just print it off. Like, there's a lot of people do planners that people can print off and get paid for it. I'm sure there's something around planners I can do because I love that kind of thing. So I haven't got any concrete plans for them. I've just got lots of ideas that I probably do need to sit down and think about properly. But just continue to do what I'm doing. People seem to want to see clothes videos at the moment, and I would like to kind of not always be doing clothing videos. There is other things I would like to do as well. But you've got to give people what they want to watch. It's no good me talking about something that nobody wants to watch.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we've had this conversation outside of this, and I think you're right. I one person told me, a coach kind of mentioned, you might be Gandalf, but you're not teaching everybody else to be Gandalf. You're teaching everybody else to be, I don't know, what's the equivalent of Gandalf, like a starter. So let's go Yoda for Star Wars. Yoda and the young Padawan. That's a Star Wars reference. People won't get it, but like you're teaching people at a level where they're trying to manage the challenges they're facing there, before they get into ninja level, you know. In terms of the membership, I've got some of the questions that a couple of the members have asked kind of reminded me of that, you know, because I'm thinking about deeper stuff, whereas they're kind of how to overcome procrastination, how do I manage my snacking, you know? And they're not easy, but they're kind of the foundational habit stuff as well. So it's interesting. So I think you're right. It's kind of, well, what is it that they want? I wonder why is it that they're fascinated with that as well, you know, with the clothing side. What is that about, you
I
know?
don't know. I mean, I watch them myself. It's nice to see what people are buying, and actually it's nice to see what clothes look like on a real plus size woman, because when you see them on the models on the on you know online websites, they're not size 18 to 20, they're size 12 to 14, and they've got plus size clothes on. So I think that's one of the reasons. But with a lot of bigger YouTube channels, you give them those kind of videos until you get to a level in the amount of subscribers where you've got quite a few thousand, and then they will watch other videos that you bring out, but you've got to get to that stage first.
I love that. And thanks for sharing. It's been great.
You're welcome.
And thank you, listeners. If there's any thoughts or questions for before I do that, how can people find the Geordie Grandma and get in touch with you?
My YouTube channel is youtube.com/GeordieGrandma, and my blog is Geordie Grandma, sorry, thegeordiegrandma.co.uk.
Brilliant.
But you can put those in the descriptions if you want
I'll
to
put the
make
links
it
in show
easier.
notes. Links in show notes for it. But if you want to jump over, then please do. It's great. I really enjoyed it. Although I'm a bloke, but from a perspective of like seeing how you run the YouTube channel and show the videos, I think it comes across very authentic, down to earth, and something I've certainly learned from as well, you know. So thank you very much. And any questions or feedback, please email me, Dave, at restlessmidlifer.com, and I'll catch you in the next episode. Take care. Thanks for listening. You can check out the show notes and other episodes at midlifereshape.com/podcast. And it'd be great if you could subscribe, share, rate, review, and all of that. That would be magic. And if you are a midlifer and you're finding that your health has taken a back seat and you really want to get life back on your terms, put stress in its place and start to lose that weight and lose it sustainably long term for midlife and beyond, pop over to midlifereshape.com to find out about the community membership, and I'd love to see you there. Any feedback or questions or ideas for future show topics or guests, then drop me a line at dave@restlessmidlifer.com. And just one more shout out to Logan Nicholson of musicformakers.com for the awesome music for the podcast. That's it for now. Take care, keep sweating the right sprouts, and look after yourself.